Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly Saturday to you.
Goodly Saturday, Andrew. How are you today?
I'm all right. I think this is the first time that we have ever recorded an Arscast Extra on a Saturday. Now, maybe one of our listeners would be able to correct us on that, but I do not remember ever doing it on a Saturday before.
The only time I might think it could have been would be if we'd played, if Boxing Day, say, had fallen on a Friday.
Yeah.
And we'd done an immediate one, or a New Year's Day game on a Friday, and we thought, oh, let's do one the following day. But it's definitely unconventional.
It certainly is, and it's, you know, obviously because of your recording or your filming commitments, people might think, you know, horrible histories and all that. But, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, your role in the new Wes Anderson movie, I think, is going to blow people away. Like, you're a whimsy coffee shop owner in Knightsbridge seeking the perfect cinnamon bun with a cast of characters. Owen Wilson as a lovable cabbie. Natalie Portman. She's always in his films, isn't she?
They're great guys.
Yeah.
We're getting on like a house on fire.
She's like a food blogger who's lost the sense of taste. So it's all very...
Yeah, that's it. But through me and my magical cinnamon bun experiments, she rediscovers her love of pastry.
Yeah.
It's going to win all the awards.
And it's very colourful as well, I believe.
With
Wes Anderson. You know how it is.
Working on a Sunday. Can you believe it? Sunday and a Monday, hence recording on a Saturday.
That's it. And don't they know that the World Cup round of 16, what's it called? The knockout stages. They're on. Yeah. They're happening. As we talk, they are happening. It's currently Netherlands 1, USA 0. I don't know if you saw the goal, did you?
No, I heard it was a good goal.
It was
a 20 pass move.
It was a very nice passing move by the Netherlands. I'm not sure that the tracking from midfield from the USA was as good as it has been in this tournament, because I think they've been pretty strong in midfield. But Memphis Depay, now the second highest goal scorer in Dutch history.
There's definitely something going on, isn't there, with modern players are scoring a lot more international goals. You know, we spoke about Olivier Giroud at length last week and how Mbappe was sort of already nearly catching him up. Harry Kane is going to be England's top goal scorer of all time, almost certainly. There must be a lot more games.
It feels like there's a lot more games. So, I mean, you know, there's a 32-team World Cup now, and the thinking of extending it to 48 for the 48. Next one, or is it the one after that? I mean, jeez, I don't know about that. But, you know, all these Nations League games, I guess there are certain fixtures, you know, particularly in European football, without wishing to demean any of our European neighbours and friends. But, you know, there are certain games where an element of stat padding could be applied, couldn't it? Like, if you're the Netherlands, for example, and you play Andorra, and you win 13-0 and you're Memphis Depay and you score 6 goals or whatever. I'm not saying that's happened, but, you know, it's certainly possible that the amount of goals you score isn't necessarily reflective of your ability as a player or what you have achieved as a footballer.
No, that's true. We need to weight the goals, really. I think a goal in the Nations League should count for about half a goal, right?
Yeah, depending on the opposition. I mean, you could play Germany in the Nations League, but I don't know how you do that in terms of the opposition and the quality of the opposition without offending everyone.
Doesn't the European Golden Shoe weight goals in that way?
I think so. I seem to remember that before, but I don't quite really... I haven't heard of the Golden Shoe for a long time now.
No. But I seem to recall that it used to have some sort of waiting for quality of league. Whether or not that's still the case, I do not know. But, yes, it's interesting. I mean, apparently United States had started the game pretty well.
But then, I saw a chance. The goalkeeper made a save, all right. Could have been from Pulisic. I was preparing for the podcast, though, you know, so I was only keeping half an eye on it because as a professional, dude. I was being diligent and getting the questions and all those kinds of things.
Well, where should we begin, Andrew? I mean, there's been a lot going on.
There has been a lot going on.
Beyond it. I mean, did you see, let's start with some Arsenal news. Did you see the report of our first friendly of the midwinter break?
I just saw that before we were starting to record. Yeah, that we have been beaten 4-2 by Watford. Was it at London Colney or was it at Watford? No, it was at London Colney. And we were beaten 4-2, and I think it's great. I think it's fantastic.
Why do you think that's great, Andrew?
I think it's great because I remember... Was it this time last year or anyway? I don't remember exactly when, but it was one of those where we played maybe
Brentford. It's usually Brentford.
Yeah, Brentford or Leighton Orient. Anyway, so and we got beaten, and everyone went, "Ah, Jesus, this fucking what's going on here?" And then you know, it turns out that these friendly games don't actually mean shit. And when the real football was on, we were good. So I'm glad that we are not lulling anyone into any kind of, you know, sense that, oh, look, we've beaten Watford 6-1. You know, this is just going to be, we're going to pick up where we left off. I think we need this, you know, just to keep us grounded. Top of the table, everything else. But, you know, you've got to keep your feet on the ground. Make sure that nobody's getting carried away with themselves. So I'm only sorry it wasn't like 4-0 rather than 4-2.
I think the game did swing on a number of half-time changes. I mean, the starting 11 Arsenal picks was pretty strong. Hein, Cedric, Holding, Gabriel, Tierney, Elneny, Lokonga, Odegaard, Nelson, Marquinhos and Nketiah. I think goals from Marquinhos and Nketiah had Arsenal in a 2-1 lead, but then I think they changed pretty much the entire team at half-time for the academy.
And, by the goalkeeper, who was changed then on the hour mark thereabouts. So, I mean, there are some names, you know, that we don't see anywhere really near the first team at all in the substitutes that Arsenal use. So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think anything? Do you care? Is it just really a training exercise?
I really think it is just a training exercise. I mean, you know, particularly in these behind closed doors games, the players know that it's a training exercise, and the adrenaline that you would associate with any sort of competitive game isn't going to be there. I think the players travel to Dubai tomorrow. It's certainly in the next couple of days. And this will be the bulk of that group. Emil Smith Rowe is set to join them as well. But this is the very start of their preparations. I mean, they've been back in training, I think, for a few days only. So, no, I don't think we can read too much into this result. But it is, you know, it's a decent group that will be taken away to Dubai. Guys who, you know, people like Gabriel and Tierney and Odegaard, they've played plenty of minutes and made big contributions. Eddie Nketiah, another one, I guess people will be keeping a close eye on how sharp he looks in this period, especially given the news this morning about Gabriel Jesus.
Yes, the Gabriel Jesus news, and I was reminded of this little clip from The Simpsons, actually, when I heard it.
Would you say it's time for our viewers to crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside?
Yes, I would, Ken.
Yes, I would. it's hard not to be worried, isn't it? I did notice as well there's no Zinchenko in the friendly game either. Ooh, sorry, that was just me watching the USA force the Netherlands goalkeeper into a good save. Yeah, no Zinchenko in that, but obviously the Gabriel Jesus news is pretty worrying, isn't it?
A shame as well for him. For his tournament, we discussed, didn't we, last week that the various tournament scenarios for Jesus, and not scoring and being injured was, I don't think, one of the ones we opted for. He seemed to pick up an injury fairly early on in the Brazil game against Cameroon the other night, played on to about the hour mark and came off. Subsequent tests have shown his tournament is over. There are some initial tentative reports of a month-long absence, but from what we hear, there need to be more tests really before any kind of definite duration can be put against it. Not good news.
It's not good news. No, and I feel like, you know, from his perspective as well, having done so well, like I do wonder if he'd scored a few goals, a few more goals this season, right? Like there's nobody outside of, you know, or inside the world of Arsenal fans who would say anything other than Gabriel Jesus has been fantastic. He's been just so good for us. Whether he scores or he doesn't score, he is a really important player. I think you would say he is the very essence of a spinal player, right? When you think about the Arsenal spine and everything else, he is definitely one of those. I wonder if he had scored it like another three or four goals and maybe another three or four goals in the last few weeks before this. Oh, sorry. That's another USA guy going on a run into the box. I'm going to make all kinds of strange exclamations as we're recording, but you know, would he have been more in line for a starting place for Brazil, you know? And if not, you know, what kind of an impact is this tournament going to have on him? Because he's gone into it maybe hoping that he might be, you know, in the first team. He's not. He's got a chance against Cameroon. Didn't play that well, as far as I'm aware. I didn't see that game at all. But, you know, like you say, picked up a knock, was taken off after an hour mark. I think there's a fair bit of criticism within Brazil for him. I don't quite understand why, but do you think this tournament, given what happened in the previous tournament and his desire to make up for it this time around, I mean, do you have any concerns that, you know, we talked about Mertesacker and Ozil coming back after being World Cup winners and finding their motivation, you know, a little bit hard. Do you think that he might be negatively impacted by this World Cup and what's transpired, even if, you know, he might say, okay, well, I didn't have the injury. I didn't have a chance to properly show what I could do. Do you have any concerns in that regard?
Possibly. I mean, he's a very driven guy, and I think, you know, if you were looking for a positive spin here, you know, the motivation for him to come back from this, you know, will be substantial, and he'll feel he has a real point to prove.
2-0, Netherlands.
Sorry to our Americans. I mean, they already know the result at this point.
Yeah.
They may well be laughing, thinking about the extraordinary comeback they made.
Yeah, maybe so. Daily Blind. Another goal where just the USA defence is caught a bit flat-footed. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Anything Matt Turner could do?
No, not for either goal, I don't think. Like, Matt Turner did the classic goalkeeper, for fuck's sake, what were you guys doing? Gesture after the ball hit the back of the net there. So
good to see he's picked that up from Aaron Ramsdale in his brief time at Arsenal.
Yeah.
I mean, passing on how it's done.
Well, that and, you know, distribution from the back.
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah. Anyway, I don't massively worry about the mental impact. I worry much more about the physical one at this point in time, maybe because that's more tangible, more real, but more easy to get a grip on. You know, to lose him, you know, even if it is just a few weeks, Arsenal play on Boxing Day on the 26th. We're speaking on the 3rd. You'd have to think, you know, he's a considerable doubt for that game. Then they got games against Brighton and Newcastle pretty much within a week. North London Derby, mid-January.
Then
there's
Man
a
United.
Big run of games in that period. You know, Spurs, it's Newcastle, Spurs and United in the space of 3 weeks between January 3rd and 22nd. We really need Gabriel Jesus for those matches, I think.
They did say in the report I read from the Brazilian paper, I think it was Globo, I think that's the name of it anyway, but they were talking about him having that knee problem or that pain in his knee, you know, while he was playing for Arsenal. So I don't know that the injury was caused by the knock that he took in the game against Cameroon, but maybe it made it a bit more painful. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, aggravated it, I think. Mm. Juninho, formerly of Middlesbrough fame, is the Brazil team coordinator. He's basically got Edu's old job. And apparently he's talking with Arsenal about the prospect of whether Jesus returns to London or if he stays in Doha with the squad and undergoes treatment there. I mean, in some respects for his morale, if Arsenal have confidence in Brazilian medics and physios, and to be fair, Edu's extremely well connected with that setup, I can see the merit in keeping him out there. I just think it must be very dispiriting for a player.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Early.
Yeah, but it's a weird one as well because, you know, you come home from the tournament and you're watching from afar. But if you're there and you can't play, that must also be super frustrating.
True.
Unless you're, you know, I think the one thing you would say about Gabriel Jesus, well, there's many things you could say about him, but what I would say from the few months that we have known him well is that he is obviously very much a team player. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not at all selfish, I don't think. So maybe a guy with that kind of personality, a guy with that kind of outlook, is capable of, you know, being part of the squad, being supportive, you know, doing what he can for his teammates within the context of the tournament. And that might be a good thing for him, assuming that the injury he has doesn't require more specialist care than he can get at the World Cup, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, you know, the scans that are happening at the moment will probably determine that. But imagine if, say, Brazil go on and win this tournament, and I don't think that's beyond the realms of possibility.
Certainly very possible.
The amount of talent they've got. I just kind of fear that if he does leave the group and does return to London, and, you know, he could have been on there on the pitch at the final lifting the trophy, I think that might be a sort of psychologically, that would be a substantial blow. Even if he hasn't played his part beyond the group stages, he has contributed to three games thus far, and he deserves to be, you know, there if they eventually do get medals.
Yeah, did you watch the Brazil game the other night? Because I believe...
I watched the majority of it, yeah.
I believe Martinelli was very good, yeah.
Yeah, he did. He was quite unlucky not to score. He had a header in the first half where he made good contact with it. The keeper, it was kind of the right height for him.
Made a good save,
I think he'll probably feel he maybe should have scored that one. There was one in the second half as well where he whipped in a shot. Another decent save. But he was dangerous. I think his performance was one that could get him some more game time in the tournament because he looked a real threat. He did well. And then I guess while we're talking about Gabriel Jesus going home, we should probably mention Ben White, who has had to leave the England setup. Slightly different situation, maybe in that he was a player who hadn't played a minute and didn't look particularly likely to the way it was going for him. But yeah, our thoughts are with him. I don't know the precise details of that situation, but personal reasons were cited. So let's just hope it's nothing too serious.
Yeah.
For you to leave a World Cup, you fear it probably is fairly serious.
Yeah, I think from the way that Arsenal worded their message on Twitter was something like, "We're all with you, Ben," something like that. It does make you feel like something has happened, and, you know, fingers crossed it's not too serious. But, you know, to leave a World Cup is obviously a big deal for a player, whether or not he's with the squad that go to Dubai. I think they're going tomorrow, maybe, or Monday, I'm not sure, but we'll have to wait and see if he's involved in that or if he joins up at a later date.
I imagine he'll get some time off. Like, I imagine all the players who've been at the World Cup will get some period of respite. Perhaps he would join the sort of second half of that Dubai training camp. It really just depends, doesn't it, what's going on in his personal life.
That's a weird one as well, though, isn't it? You know, to give players a bit of time off. I mean, do you give players time off? Because can you? Like, the World Cup final is what? The week before the Premier League returns, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say England or Switzerland or
let's say
Brazil.
Yeah, England. I mean, I don't think it's particularly likely, but let's imagine.
Yeah. So England get to a World Cup final, Arsenal play West Ham on the 26th. Do you give Bukayo Saka 2 weeks off? Can you give Bukayo Saka 2 weeks off when, you know, as you pointed out, when we return from the World Cup, it's West Ham, then it's Brighton away, then it's Newcastle at home, there's an FA Cup game, then it's Tottenham away and Manchester United at home. Like,
I don't think
these, I don't think it's not, night. Yeah, I mean, I think when it's the summer, you know, and there is a bit of like, okay, you can catch up on your preseason, then, okay, we can give you a couple of weeks off. You need a couple of weeks off because you've been playing all season. Then you've had little or no rest during the summer. So it's important that we actually give you some rest. But this thing coming mid-season, I just wonder if players are going to come back from the World Cup and they're going to go straight back into action for their clubs. Like, do you think that's a discussion that's happened before the tournament? Like, between, you know, the manager and the players and the coaching staff, the medical staff, all those kinds of things. Like, what is the best thing for these guys? Like, if you allow them to stop at this point, do you then have to play catch
up again?
Yeah.
It's a really tricky one. And it's actually sort of, I guess it's made worse by the fact that there is that third, fourth place playoff. So there will be four international squads in Qatar until that final weekend. I mean, I guess the reality is, you know, we're at the round of 16 now. The quarterfinals are next weekend on the 9th and 10th. So any teams that go out in the quarterfinals, I'm looking at you, England, feels plausible. You know, that will be at the latest the 10th. So you could give those players a week of rest while the first team are in Dubai. You could then bring them back and they'd have another week before the West Ham game.
Mm.
So I think anyone who goes out the quarterfinal stage has got a pretty decent chance of being available for selection against West Ham. I think if you're in that final weekend, the third, fourth playoff and the final, it's very tight, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the third, fourth place playoff at the World Cup. Is it the most pointless game of football of all time?
It is. I think in this year of all years, it's extraordinarily pointless.
I mean, but even in general, like, you know, nobody, you go to a World Cup and you want to win it. Obviously, everybody wants to win, right?
Yeah.
But nobody gives a single solitary fuck about who finishes third and who finishes fourth. And I think that goes for players more than any football fan in the entire world. Who finished third in the World Cup last time? Do you know?
No.
Was it Belgium, maybe?
In fact, it, because England were in it, weren't they? The third, fourth playoff.
Was it against Belgium?
Yeah, I think Belgium won it, didn't they?
Right. And who finished third, the one before? Like, nobody.
Yeah, really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
And it's almost insulting to, like, if you present the World Cup as this thing that is the pinnacle of the game, certainly the pinnacle of the international game, and you tell them this is the biggest tournament of your life, this is the biggest tournament, you know, in the world, it's all about winning, it's all about the trophy. Like, the final obviously is hugely contested, but third or fourth place, to make players play that game, I think it's just fucking bullshit. And
do you know the only one I remember with any kind of clarity? What was 1998? I remember Croatia finishing third.
How do you remember that? Given just, everything that happened in that, like, that
I know,
1998
I know, I can't
final.
Really explain it. I think maybe it's because it was the game where Davos Suker won the Golden Boot, and then a year or so later, he turned up at Arsenal. So maybe, like, you know, it stayed in my memory for that reason. But
that's
and
gotta
also
be just
they
random.
Had a kind of romantic run to that point. So I think they took that game pretty seriously. But by and large, it's completely pointless. So yeah, I mean, look, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe they'll bring players straight back and be like, you know, in the case of someone like Aaron Ramsdale, say, who is with England, they might be like, sure, you've been training, but you haven't been playing. We're going to call you straight back in.
Mm.
I just think...
Yeah, I mean, that's
I don't know.
Like, Ramsdale has to start, doesn't he? Yeah.
Anything.
Ramsdale has to come back in and straight away and start, even if England get to the World Cup final. Like, next week, Ramsdale is going to be playing against West Ham.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality of this mid-season World Cup.
Yeah, it's a really curious one. But if England gets to the semi-finals, I think they'll give Bukayo Saka at least a week off. I just think they'll feel that they need
to. Maybe it'll depend on how much he plays.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a case by case. But that's one of the issues. I mean, that first weekend of fixtures, bear in mind, we're out of the League Cup, but there are League Cup games before that West Ham game. What are those teams going to look like?
Wow. Well, yeah, we're not in it, so.
Not our problem.
Not our fucking problem. But it would be a problem if we were.
Yeah, but we're very much not.
Certainly not. We absolutely are not.
So, other than that, well, I mean, the World Cup results have been very, what's the word? There have been a few upsets, haven't there? And some pretty dramatic outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, I want to give some props to Japan here because... Yep. Not just because we have a vested interest in Takehiro Tomiyasu and everything else. Arsenal legend Takuma Asano doing his business in the first game. But, you know, I think one of the great things about football, right, is that we as guys who talk on a podcast and people who listen to this and people who talk with their mates, we all think we know something about the game, right? Mm. I think we do. You know, we know something about the game. We have a certain amount of knowledge. There are certain things that you could probably say, well, I can predict this or I can predict that. And maybe a lot of the time that comes true because there are probably some safe predictions out there. But if I were to say to you, if I had said to you before the group stage of this World Cup kicked off, and I said to you, James, here's what's going to happen. Germany are going to be 1-0 up on Japan at halftime in the first game. But Japan are going to turn it around and beat them 2-1. On its own, not necessarily a ridiculous proposition, right?
No.
But then I continue and I say, well, what's going to happen next is Costa Rica, who were beaten 7-0 by Spain in their first game and looked like a pub team, are going to beat Japan. And then Japan in their third game are going to be 1-0 down to Spain at halftime. And once again, they're going to turn it around and win 2-1 to top the group. You would say, stop talking to me, please, for a while. I don't want to hear from you again for a little while because you're insane.
You're a troubled man.
You have problems in your brain, and I thought I could help you fix them, but I can't.
Alas, you are beyond help.
Yeah, exactly. So I think
that's true.
The beauty of football and the beauty of what this game can give us is completely evident in quite a lot of these World Cup games. Not just that, but I think Japan, to do what they did in that group, is just outstanding. And what a remarkable, contentious, just crazy bit of football nonsense that was with the ball that went out of play but didn't go out of play and all the rest of it. How would you have felt if Arsenal had conceded that goal?
Well, I mean, aren't there all different sort of, not conspiracy theories, but, you know, there are people who say if you look at it from this angle, it's not over, blah, 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 blah. But yes, it's, you'd feel aggrieved for sure. But it was great. And Tomiyasu came off the bench, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Came off the bench and did did really well, you know, because it was another one of those games with a fair chunk of injury time. And, you know, I think they deserve a lot of props.
He spoke about it afterwards and said, he spoke about it like it was sort of good minutes in the bank for him. So
clearly
there's an ongoing fitness situation there.
I think so. I mean, he's generally a starter when he's 100% fit. And he hasn't been starting, so I'm assuming he's not been 100% fit. But the other thing I would say is that, like, whether the ball was in or out, whether it was fractionally in or fractionally out, and I guess your mileage will vary on this depending on your allegiance. I can't imagine there are too many German Arsenal fans listening to this right now who want to hear that it might have been in or whatever. But I think the way he chopped that ball back between the defender and the post was unbelievable.
True.
It really was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful bit of skill. Like, I know you don't have too many options actually when you're desperately trying to keep the ball in, but the precision of that was really something else. And like, there are some teams to enjoy in this, but man, imagine if Japan won the World Cup. That'd be great. I'd love that. I know you wouldn't.
They are
a
good team to watch, you know. They've got some good players in there. Representing Asia in style, as are South Korea. So there you go.
They are through. South Korea, of course, at the expense of Uruguay. I've got a question about Uruguay, so I'll save that for part two. Netherlands have just sort of blown a bit of an opportunity there to make it 3-0.
Doesn't look good for the US.
It doesn't. They're going to need to find some goals from somewhere. They did bring on Gio Reyna at halftime, so we'll see. Ooh, here's a guy. He's going. Oh, no, tackled. It's corner. What was I going to say to you? There was another couple of things that we should talk about, I suppose. And here's a question actually from the Discord. It comes from J_Watt17, who said, before the World Cup started, if you had to pick one Arsenal player to go home after the group stages, who would it have been? He says Thomas Partey being the only player going home would certainly have been my pick. And, you know, to any fans of Ghana who are listening, this is a purely selfish Arsenal perspective. It's not about whether... Oh, off the line. From the US, Netherlands cleared it off the line. It's not about, like, Ghana per se. It's more about, like, Partey and his injury record and everything else.
Yes. I mean, look, there are two other players potentially going home. Ben White's gone home. Mm. Gabriel Jesus. They're not in the circumstances we would like. But in terms of being knocked out, yeah, I think Ghana would have been high on everyone's list. And I wanted them to go through and get the ultimate redemption against Suarez and against Uruguay.
Mm.
I was at the ill-fated encounter between these two teams before with the Suarez handball on the line.
Mm.
I was behind that very goal.
Wow.
And Asamo Gyan skied that penalty.
He certainly did.
So, you know, I wanted justice done. But I think for Arsenal, it's a very good thing that Thomas Partey is now, I don't know what he's doing, probably on holiday. I would think.
Thomas Partey. Yeah, I don't know. I guess they go home. I guess they have to go back to Ghana and regroup and everything else. But, yeah, I mean, I presume he will then meet up with the squad in... Matt Turner just made a good save. Stopped it being 3-0. Bit of a wibbly-wobbly save, but... a good one all the same. I mean, he'll obviously hook up with the squad in Dubai. What do you think of the game against Juventus? Do you think there's any doubt about that game? Given what's been going on with them and the investigation?
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, there was a lot of talk about Arsenal having a Spanish opponent for this friendly. And I'd heard that there were some talks with Barcelona about potentially arranging a game.
We could potentially face Barcelona in the Europa League.
Yes, I suppose so. Should they beat Manchester United? So maybe best avoided for now. I think the game will go ahead. I mean, Arsenal you know, the tickets are on sale. I noticed today they've gone on to general sale. So if you're not a member, but you want to see Arsenal play Juventus just before Christmas, get yourself down there.
Mm.
But it will be a strange one because I think so many players will still be absent, most likely.
Yeah.
From both squads.
Hmm. Well, we'll wait and see, I think. We do have a question here about another Arsenal midfielder who is going through.
Yes.
Good evening, gents. After watching the scenes from Serbia versus Switzerland, says Castle on the Discord, does it seem like Granit Xhaka has finally mastered the dark arts of getting under your opponent's skin without getting sent off?
Yeah, well, we saw a bit of it, didn't we, in the Premier League before we broke up this kind of Christmas holiday. And he was in his element, shall we say, against Serbia. I don't know if this can be filed under quite the same category of sort of intelligent shithousery. I think he was very, very fired up.
You think? You think?
Yeah. And I think I think he trod a very fine line in this game. But I think he was named man of the match officially by FIFA and had a good game. But yeah, some very funny images of him taunting the Serbian bench by, I mean, there's no other way to say it, grabbing his balls.
Yep. Grabbing his balls, and it did seem to send them into a significant fury, didn't it?
But well, there's some
there's history. We know there's history, there's political history, and
there's political history, and there's some personal history. Mm. It seemed, if reports are to be believed, between the two camps,
McKennie just shot over the bar from the edge of the box. He should have done better with that. Good move from the US, actually, down the left-hand side.
Sounds like they're making a go of it.
They are having a go, to be fair. They're leaving themselves a little bit open, but, you know, when you're 2-0 down in the World Cup knockout stages, what can you do? You have to have a go. So, let's see. 53 minutes gone in that game at the time of recording. But, you know, I enjoyed that bit at the end of the game where he was pushed over by, or pushed backwards by, what's his name? Milinkovic, I think it was. And the Serbian goalkeeper is a giant of a man. Mm. Like, he really is. And, like, did you see the fact that he grabbed Xhaka around the neck with his...
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I must see if I can find the picture and I'll send it to you. But he has him around the neck. And you remember when Xhaka got sent off against Burnley?
Yeah.
Do you remember that one? It was exactly the same as that, where he sort of grabbed him. Like, it's not like he sort of started to throttle him, and his face is going blue or anything like that. It's just one of those where he just sort of grabbed him around the neck. And VAR obviously decided that there was nothing doing in that regard. But I kind of like the way that Xhaka mostly kept his cool in that regard, because I think initially he was a bit like, hey, hang on a second, this is how I react when shit like this goes down. But then he just sort of stood back a bit and let the Serbian guys go crazy. And I think he enjoyed it. I think he enjoyed himself in that game. You know, obviously when Shaqiri scores a goal and, you know, you have the history he has, to win that game on its own merits is a big thing, isn't it? Because, you know, you're going through then to the knockout stages of the World Cup. But, you know, the extra spice from all of that, that just gives you that little bit of extra, doesn't it?
Yeah, and there were some good scenes at full time. Sort of Xhaka pulled all the Swiss team over into a huddle and they were giving it all the, you know, very serious focus thing. And then the camera cut away for a moment. And then the camera cut back and they were all just going absolutely mental. So they all got together for a chat and were like, yeah. Focus.
Very good.
And then they just lost their minds.
It's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
We won.
Honestly, it was
.
And who can blame them? So, yeah, that was a tough group to get out of, I think. And they did well.
Sure. There were some good goals in that game as well.
Yeah.
Like the Mitrovic header is just... I know that's very Mitrovic, but it's still such a...
I mean, he's
such
really,
a fantastic
really good
skill.
At that
yeah,
thing.
It is. He is, isn't he? Like, he's just got this... I suppose when you've got a neck that is the size of a fucking bull's shoulders, you're able to get significant power into your headers that maybe other players don't quite manage.
By the way, on the subject of headed goals, we mentioned the Brazil-Cameroon game. What did you make of Aboubakar scoring and immediately being sent off for his celebration?
I mean, there's part of me that goes, you know what, this is the, I mean, it's just, come on, you don't need to do that. But then the other part of me knows, like all the players know. All the players know, like, you take your shirt off, you're getting a yellow card. So it's not like anyone can say, oh, I'm surprised by this. What I did like, I have to say, was the way that the referee handled it. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I thought that was really great.
He gave him a smile. He gave him a high five.
Gave him a high five. It was like, look, you know, you've left me no choice here. Here's your second yellow. There's your red. Godspeed. Away you go. And all the rest of it. I thought that was really quite a nice moment, considering, you know, there are other referees out there who would have done that with a flourish. You know the kind I mean. They would have, like, made it a bit about themselves. And I think as well, you know, the way that the referee, let's say at the end of the Uruguay game, the sort of abuse that he was subjected to from the Uruguay players, and maybe we'll come to this in the second half of the show when we've got a question about it. You know, it's in stark contrast to that. Like, I get that emotions run high and all the rest of it, but I thought that was really just quite a very funny moment, no?
I think so. And I think, you know, one day Aboubakar will be telling his grandchildren about the winning goal he scored against Brazil in a World Cup, and I think the red card will fade with time.
I think so. It was a good goal as well. I really like that header as well, near post and everything else.
Great header. Really good. Well, should we move on to part two and we can get to the meat of the Luis Suarez discussion?
Sure. Why not? Let's take a break here. We'll be back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. And if you'd like to sign up, you can do so to get all the extra content, support everything we do on the site for just a fiver a month. It's patreon.com/ Arseblog. While we were talking there, James, in the break, you know, the mythical break, people love to know what happens in the break. Matt Turner made another good save for the USA. And I feel like, you know, even if this game looks like it's getting away from them, it feels like he is somebody who has enhanced his reputation during this tournament. We haven't really spoken a lot about him, but he's had a good time in Qatar.
Yeah, he has. I think he's had a good tournament, and I think it will be a real lift to him.
Mm.
And, you know, theoretically, there are games for him. You know, there's the FA Cup, which starts.
Mm-hmm.
Arsenal go to Oxford on a Monday night.
Oh, fucking Monday night.
I know, unbelievable. And then it will be really interesting, really, really interesting to see what happens with the Europa League, I think, when that resumes. And when Arsenal's involvement in it resumes, should we say, in the spring. You know, will Arteta stick with Turner or will he opt for Ramsdale?
I think he's got to go with Ramsdale. I'm sorry for Matt Turner and Matt Turner fans, but he is the number two goalkeeper. And the Europa League is, you know, it's a high priority competition for Arsenal this season.
I would be inclined to agree. You know, I think a goalkeeper can play all those games without some of the same physical repercussions or risks for an outfielder. And I think, I think we should be picking our best team as we get into the knockout stages of that competition.
Yeah.
Which does make life tricky for Turner. I mean, that is the awkward thing about that second choice goalkeeper role. You know, you want someone who is good enough to push and challenge your number one, but they're probably not going to play enough games to keep them entirely happy. And that's always the difficult balance to strike. And it probably means you get quite a lot of turnover in that position. You know, it might be that you sign a guy, he does a good job for a few years, and then he feels, I need to play, I want to go and play. And then you've got to find somebody else. And you know, that's the way that part of the market often operates. But Turner's had a good tournament, no doubt about it, whatever happens today with America.
Well, let me ask you a question here from the Discord, from JMart91, who says, who has been your favourite player to watch at this World Cup so far?
Of any player?
Mm. Anyone?
That is a good question, you know. Who have I really enjoyed watching? I've really, really, really enjoyed what I've seen of Pedri, I have to say.
Yeah.
He's absolute quality, isn't he?
It's unbelievable. It really is. The sort of composure and the technical quality, the awareness that he has at his age is, you know, it's unbelievable. It really is. He's 20, and I think Gavi as well has been great.
It's kind of maddening and insane, really, that Spain could have that period of such dominance based on Xavi and Iniesta, and then they, you know, move aside, and you think, well, it's going to be difficult for them to recover from that. Within a few years, they produce two players, the quality of Pedri and Gavi. They are both extraordinary. So Pedri would be right up there for me.
There was a tweet during the rounds. Did you see that? It was retweeted like over a couple of days. I can't remember who it was from, so apologies. It was like, oh, look at us. We're Spain. We just lost two of the greatest technical midfielders in the world, and we just replaced them with, like, you know, with these kids. Like, and it's just absolute bullshit that they're able to do it. I must look that up. But
what else? I'm trying to think. Listen, I really enjoyed the Ghana winger. Is his name? Who plays for Ajax?
Kudus.
Yeah.
He's been good. I liked him as well.
I think he is a really exciting player, Mohamed Kudus, and, you know, 22 years old, world at its feet, really. I mean, the problem with any player who plays for Ajax is that they've just sold Antony for a bajillion pounds.
Mm. I mean, that more and more, that looks like an amazing deal for Ajax.
Yeah, they did extraordinarily well there. But I think he's a big talent. And, you know, with Arsenal potentially looking at wide players, that is a name I think should be on their radar and on their list. I think it's really, really exciting.
I'm very sorry that Ghana didn't play the host nation in this tournament because, their goalkeeper, we could have had a lot of Ziggy play Qatar headlines. That would have been good. I have really enjoyed Wojciech Szczęsny.
Oh, man. When he saved that Messi penalty, wow.
Yeah. What did you think of that?
That was important. You know, the goal difference mattered ultimately in that group,
yeah.
I believe.
The goal difference mattered to the extent that I've completely forgotten what I was going to say. So I will ask you what you thought of the award of that penalty in the first place, because I thought it was extremely generous. And I've also heard a lot of people say, well, it's pretty obviously a penalty because he catches him in the face with his glove.
I think it's harsh. For me personally, my sort of football ethics, I was like, that's not a penalty.
You can't do that.
What did you think?
I thought it was really harsh, but I sort of see, like, technically, yes, he brushed him on the face with the finger, with the little bits of the top of his glove or whatever. But I also think Messi made a complete meal of it, so.
I really liked, though, I was watching that live and after the penalty was awarded, the speed with which Szczęsny focused up, like there was a moment where one of his defenders like came to talk to him and he sort of just pushed them away because he was like, I just need to think about this that I'm about to do right now.
Did you see him say that, like, he talked to Messi and he said, basically said to Messi, I bet you €100 they won't give this. Like before the referee went over to VAR.
Really?
And he bet Messi €100 that they wouldn't give it. And then they gave it. And then he said, I'm not going to pay him anyway. He's got enough money.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, great save. And it's a bit of a kind of a redemption in some ways for Szczęsny. I had a good message on Twitter about this.
Mm.
I think it was from Richard Daniels. And he spoke about how Szczęsny's not had great luck in tournaments down the years. He was sent off in the first game of Euro 2012, which was hosted by Poland. He was injured for World Cup 2014, dropped in Euro 2016, had a poor World Cup 2018, and scored an own goal in Euro 2020. So, him to have these big... it was two penalty saves so far, isn't it, in the tournament... yeah, it's been a long time coming, and I'm pleased for him to be getting that recognition. And Poland play, who've they got? Somebody difficult.
France. They're playing France tomorrow.
France at 3 o'clock tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, so they were very bad against Argentina.
Yeah.
They were extraordinarily bad.
They were pretty negative, weren't they? So, yeah. I mean, on the subject of individual players. I've got no real soft spot for Argentina, but, you know, there is something sort of poignant about watching Messi in what's almost certainly his last World Cup.
Sure.
And his kind of personal crusade to win the World Cup before retirement. And he has delivered.
Matt Turner again just made. I just turned to the stream here and I saw like a Netherlands player basically with just Matt Turner to beat. Matt Turner stuck out a hand or a knee or something and stopped it being 3-0.
Wow.
I don't know if they hit the post or if he made a save before that. And he's out again to smother at the feet of the attacker. Wow.
He's the modern sweeper keeper now.
He's doing very well, Matt Turner.
That's good. Listen, I mean, I do think that some of the Turner analysis has been... I think he's really suffered from the fact that his previous playing experience has only been in MLS, you know?
Mm.
And understandably, there is a kind of skepticism about that. But his shot-stopping ability is really, really, really strong.
It's a double save, James. There's a shot from outside the box that he dives to his right.
I've just seen it myself. Yeah, the second save is really good.
Yeah. Quick reactions. That's one of those where, you know, the way you see sometimes the training videos of goalkeepers and they're like, they have like angled boards or whatever, and they throw the ball down at the board and it sort of spins off a different way, and they have to, like, you know, stick their hands out or legs out or whatever. That's a save from that kind of training.
He's also a very easy guy to root for, like a really lovely guy, and also a late developer. I mean, I think I'm right saying he only started playing soccer with any degree of seriousness in his mid-teens. You know, came through quite late in the States and only came to Europe now in his sort of mid to late 20s. So it's a steep learning curve he's on. And yeah, I mean, you know, on the evidence of this tournament seems to be really benefiting him and benefiting the US, the experience he's getting in Europe. So yeah, I'm really happy for him. It's hard, you know, second choice goalkeeper, you don't get that many moments to shine. So
yeah,
glad he's taking this one. But fortunately, his teammates still need to do the business at the other end of the pitch.
Yeah, you were in the middle of a question when I so rudely interrupted you, so I apologise.
Oh, just Messi, personal crusade. Oh, yeah. I find that quite compelling. And I actually think, you know, looking or listening to reactions about this Netherlands-USA match, I think Argentina, should they win tonight, they play Australia, where they're strong favourites. I think they face the winner of this game. I think that would be a winnable fixture. So they've got a path into the semis there for them. And maybe this could be Messi's time. And I don't know many football fans who would begrudge him if it was.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a hell of a story. You realise, of course, you've just completely jinxed Argentina right now.
Yeah, the Aussies will be celebrating tonight.
All of our Australian listeners are going, thank you, James, after their remarkable 1-0 win. They've had to stay up till 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning to watch.
There's something compelling about that, though. 35-year-old Messi, last chance saloon.
Off the line from the USA, had you write...
I think you're going to tell me Matt Turner scored in a minute, aren't you?
Probably. There'll be just an outburst from me at some point. Yeah, look.
Actually, right. You rate him, don't you?
Oh,
is he your favourite player you've watched?
Messi is a World Cup winner. You know, as a football romantic, would be hard to not get behind. You know, I know there are people listening to this who will have a vested interest in their own nation going all the way and lifting the tournament, so they don't want to see that right now. I get that. And of course, I'm sure there are people who are on the, you know, the wrong side of the great football debate, you know, the Messi or Ronaldo thing. There's, you know, people who are just simply wrong about that because they think it's Ronaldo. And they wouldn't want to see Messi win the World Cup. But, you know, I would, as a neutral, I would have no problem with Messi winning the World Cup. Oh, goal! Goal, 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 goal! Goal, USA!
Game on.
Game fucking on right here.
Wow, and that's the first time I've seen a goalkeeper score in this tournament. But what a strike from Matt Turner.
It's a corner. Netherlands clear it. Comes back in. Ball out to Pulisic. Plays a low cross.
Your man Hadji Wright, is it?
Oh, my goodness. I don't think, if that's deliberate, then I am an aardvark. I think it just kind of hits his heel and goes in. I'm watching. Oh, he sort of swings a leg out, but I've never seen anybody score a goal like that in my life. Because you know the way-
Oh, my word. I think we can assume that's not deliberate.
Because... you know, you've seen players score goals kind of like that when they do that sort of back flick, you know?
Yeah.
But he just stuck his toe out. I think it's rolled over his big toe, spun up in the air and into the back of the net. Wow.
I mean, I hope he tells everyone he meant it.
That's a training ground routine we've been working on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Myself and Matt Turner, you know, we do that 3 or 4 times a session, and, you know, it worked out for us in the end. So that makes this an interesting finish, 2-1. It's 76, 77 minutes on the clock, so there you go.
I mean, along these lines, actually, of this question, Chris White on Twitter said, I know it might not be the best time for transfer talk, but is there anyone you've seen play at this World Cup you think could be an interesting option for Arsenal in the future? I think Mohamed Kudus would be mine.
Yeah.
Is there anyone who's jumped out at you?
Not
Messi, obviously.
Well, no. I love him, but no. I think, yeah, that guy Kudus was somebody I thought would be quite interesting because of our need as much as anything, you know? Mm. I also thought Gakpo was quite interesting. I know he's a player we've been linked with, but, you know, how strong that interest is, I'm not 100% sure. I think what's been quite interesting about this World Cup is a sort of equalization in the technical level of footballers.
Right.
You know, that certainly wasn't always the case. You know, there's always going to be some teams who are minnows, relatively speaking, but I do think in general the technical level of players at this World Cup has been very interesting. But no, I haven't really been thinking about it in that regard, you know. I haven't been sort of watching and...
You haven't been scouting?
Not really, you know, because I do think there's a danger of... Oh, how would you put this? The El Hadji Diouf-ification of your transfers. Because he was obviously a player that Liverpool signed based on the excellent World Cup that he had. And he turned out to be very average and a complete prick. So I'm a bit cautious about it from that perspective.
Yeah, I think in general terms, sometimes you're really impressed by a nation more so than players.
Mm.
I think that we spoke about the success of Japan, but you know, Tomiyasu's come into Arsenal and really, really impressed. And I do wonder if we might see maybe more Japanese players coming into the Premier League and...
Mm.
Making an impact at higher level in European football. I think that, you know, their success in this tournament could be a catalyst for that, you know, happening more broadly in the market.
Let me ask.
There are countries where Japanese players, you know, there's plenty in Germany.
That's right, yeah.
You know, Tomiyasu himself played in Belgium, but some other leagues.
And Italy.
But some other leagues have been a little slower. To embrace Japanese footballers, but I think there's a lot of talent there.
Sure is. Okay, let me ask you this one then. Where's it gone? Okay, BF Jesus on Discord says, goodly morning. In this full week of World Cup madness, what has been your favourite moment and why is it Luis Suarez crying?
That was great. As I said, I was at the infamous Ghana-Uruguay game where he committed the handball. And even beyond that, there are, I would say, countless reasons to dislike Luis Suarez.
Mm.
And so to see them go out was joyful. And the thing is, I feel bad. You know, whenever I'm like, I don't really like, I think I was watching it.
3-1.
Yeah, I just
3-1. Nothing Matt Turner could do about that. Where is the marking?
I do not know. Is that Denzel Dumfries?
Yeah.
At the back post. That's probably that.
I'd say that's it. Unless Hadji Wright can come up with a goal off his Mickey like William Gallas.
I wouldn't rule it out given the last goal he scored. Yes, Luis Suarez. And I always feel bad when there's a nation that I sort of take against. You know, it feels unfair to be like, well, I do not like the people of Uruguay.
Sure.
And of course, that's not the case. But as a team, I've not ever held any great affection for them. And I have to say the manner in which they took their elimination made me feel like maybe I had some justification for my position there.
I mean, the thing about it is the penalty that Portugal got in their game, which was, I think, a ludicrous penalty to be given.
Yes.
Ultimately is what saw Uruguay go out. Without that penalty, they would have gone through, you know, with a 2-0 defeat. So I can understand a certain amount of grievance, but like you, I think the way they reacted and the way they harangued the officials and the referees was pretty much out of order. And the other day, was it yesterday? I've kind of lost track of football days. It was yesterday, wasn't it?
Which day?
Uruguay, when they got beaten. It was yesterday, right? Today's Saturday. That game was on Friday.
Yes. Wow. It does all blur. It was Friday the 2nd, yeah.
The reaction from my Twitter timeline, which is basically the people who I follow, was, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. I've never seen such an outpouring of antipathy and hilarity about somebody else's very obvious misery in all my life. Like, the whole timeline was just like...
It was just a gallery of pictures of Luis Suarez crying.
Luis Suarez crying. Luis Suarez holding his shirt over his head. Luis Suarez taking his shirt down to show that he's been crying some more. You know, I've never seen anything like it in my life. And I think it says a lot about how Luis Suarez is regarded among many football fans, you know, and it's not just Arsenal fans that I follow. I, you know, obviously follow mostly Arsenal fans, but, you know, there are fans of other teams and journalists and people who work, you know, in football and everything else. You know, the just the sheer volume of like, look at this guy. And I think what made it as funny as it was the fact that he began almost immediately when news of South Korea's second goal broke. Like, it wasn't an end-of-game reaction, you know what I mean? It wasn't like the game was over and he was upset and he cried. And look, he wouldn't be the first and he won't be the last footballer to shed tears at a result, you know, having invested a lot in a tournament or whatever else it is, right? But it was the fact he was sitting there while the game was going on, just crying because he knew that Uruguay didn't have what it takes to score a goal. Yeah. And that's just very funny.
And, you know, the fact that he'd been brought off, you know, because they, I guess, felt like they were in a safe position.
Yeah.
And then he was helpless, stranded on the sidelines.
He should be playing Tuesday League Astro, you know. You can do rolling subs. And come back on.
That's
again.
Why they were all so angry with the referee at full time. They're like, don't you know about rolling subs? I wouldn't put it past FIFA by the time the next World Cup comes around. Listen, the US are headed to defeat, it seems, today. But Devin Holton, who's one of our listeners, has asked, as an American, I'm curious what you think the USA's chances are of winning 2026 tournament. Are there any, he said, obviously 2022 is a long shot, but are there any players in this USA team you'd love to see in an Arsenal shirt?
I mean, I did like Tyler Adams. I thought he was a bit poor for the first Dutch goal today, but I think he's had a good tournament. He seems like a good player and a good guy. Can I see the USA winning it in 2026? I mean, beyond the magic of Haji Wright, I really do think they're missing a forward. I said this to you maybe off air. You know, I think there's plenty in this team, plenty in this US team in terms of ability, the commitment. I think they're very energetic. They work really hard. But I think they're just missing one or two top-class forward players, which you need in order to win a World Cup. So unless they develop or come through in the 4 years between now and 2026, I can't see the US winning it. But, you know, I think where they are now compared to where they were, you know, not that long ago, they have made real progress.
Yeah, I think winning it would be a stretch, but I can see a situation where they're able to, you know, push into the knockout stages, maybe go further than it looks like they will do this time. But there's not an obvious solution at this point in time to that kind of attacking situation. And Freddie Adu will be 37 by the time the next World Cup comes around. So I think I better give up my dreams of him ever fulfilling his potential.
All right, then. Linus Erickson, who's at Limp Shit on Twitter.
Lovely.
Lovely. Just conjured up some images I don't really need at this moment. He said, goodly afternoon, gents. Since we're in the middle of a World Cup, it would be fun to hear your best World Cup memories. As a Swede born in the 1980s, 1994 will always have a special place in my heart.
I'm sorry, Andrew, I tuned out. I was reading Sam Dean on Twitter asking if Hadji Wright meant that goal. And thinking, come on now, Sam D.
Sam, come on.
Come on, Sam. Ask me again.
He says...
something about Sweden 94.
He said that he is a Swede born in the 1980s, so the 1994 World Cup will always have a special place in his heart, and he was wondering about our own best World Cup memories.
Yeah, I mean, so France 98, I even remember who won the third, fourth place playoff.
Yeah.
Arsenal won the World Cup, as the headline ran the following day. You know, it was in a France squad that included Petit and Vieira.
Yeah.
Gilles Grimaldi just missing out on that one. but, yeah, that was a great tournament and one I remember really fondly. I think the final as well, it was dramatic. Zidane sort of cemented his position at the top of the game. There was all the sort of mystery and around Ronaldo. So there's kind of a mythology around that game. So that's right up there. And then in terms of tournament experiences, you know, the ones I attended in South Africa and in Brazil, I really loved, and getting to explore those countries as well as go to a bunch of games was just brilliant. And, I have earmarked 2026. I like the idea of getting out to, you know, America and Canada and Mexico and trying to see some of those games. Hopefully, I can make that happen.
Right.
What about you?
I mean, I guess the ones between 82 and 94, not that they were formative, but like 82, I was 11, and football in the summer, you know, you're with your mates and everything else. You're just sort of playing football. Then you go in and watch the games. And I remember seeing Northern Ireland beat Spain, Jerry Armstrong scoring that one. 86, the Mexican World Cup in 86 was brilliant as well because of the time that the games were on. It was the summer. I think I was 15 at that point, and you're sort of like... sounds a bit weird to say it, but you know, you're the master of your own bedtime, you know, at 15. It's not like when you're 10 or 11 and your parents are like, go to bed now, because they basically want some time on their own, peace and quiet, which, you know, I think many parents will understand. But at 15, you're sort of the master of your own bedtime. So we had like two rooms in the house. One, the front room was like what we call the television room, which is what people were in. And then there was sort of the posh room, the lounge, which later changed. But there was a little portable TV in there. And we would watch, or I would watch, certainly, the games that were on late because it was Mexico. And the time difference was there. And just sort of sitting up late at night watching games in that one. But I thought that was a great World Cup. 1990, Ireland, Italia 90. Ireland got to the quarterfinals, which was amazing. David O'Leary scoring the penalty against Romania. I remember was I doing my exams, like my end of school exams? I think I probably was. It's called the Leaving Cert, like the equivalent of your A levels.
Yeah.
And I was doing those in 1990. And I think the Ireland-Romania game, which was the first knockout round in the World Cup, coincided with one of the exams.
Okay.
So I was doing my exam, finished the exam, and I remember walking from the school where the exams were on to my uncle's house, my dad's brother, my uncle Hugh, because that was closer to the school. It was about halfway between my house and the school. So it was like about a 10-minute walk from the school up to there. And people were there, like my dad was there and my cousins were there, and they're all sitting around watching that game. And I arrived maybe with 5 minutes of normal time left, and then it went to extra time, obviously went to a penalty shootout. But I remember walking, and there was 28 days later. Remember that film?
Yeah.
That's what the streets of Dublin were like. There was nobody anywhere. There were no people. There was no traffic. It was just quiet. Everybody was watching the World Cup. Like the whole nation. I can't explain how, you know, for a small nation like Ireland, everybody was invested in it and everybody was watching and nothing was happening while games were on and stuff like that. So I think those are the ones that stick with me. USA 94 as well, because Ireland were in it again, and Jack Charlton, and you remember those.
Yeah, was that Ray Houghton scoring?
Yeah, Ray Houghton scoring against Italy. Yeah. I think it was in Giant Stadium, was it? That was an amazing result. Unbelievable result. Paul McGrath that day was just phenomenal. For a guy whose knees were, you know, basically bollocksed, it was an unbelievable performance. So, yeah, those are the ones, I think.
Some nice World Cup. World Cup shout-outs, World Cup memories. We had a lot of questions about Gabriel Jesus, but we kind of talked about that. I mean, I was interested in this perspective from Fionn, who's at AJ Fionn, and they said, good morning, gents. Do you think the majority of the reaction to Jesus' injury is an overreaction? With Eddie in amongst our first team, I don't think the Jesus injury will affect us too badly.
I think that is a commendably optimistic view of this situation.
Sure.
Like, I'm not as down on Eddie Nketiah as some people, but I think what Gabriel Jesus has given us this season is special, you know? And I'm not sure that Eddie can give us that. I just don't think he's as rounded a footballer, you know? I think his game has certainly improved from where it was 18 months ago. I think he can do more outside the box and everything else, but I don't see him as capable of contributing as much as Gabriel Jesus. And if I'm wrong, I will eat the humble pie. The whole pie and nothing but the pie.
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think, I don't really doubt that if Eddie starts games, he'll score goals here and there.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? 5 in 7 starts, I think, in the league towards the end of last season.
Yeah.
But it's everything else Jesus brings, you know, what he does with the ball, his dribbling ability, the way in which he leads the press, the relentless work rate. It's no insult to Eddie Nketiah to suggest that he won't match that.
No, I think, you know, we also have to bear in mind that, you know, Gabriel Jesus for the last 4 years, 5 years, has been playing regularly for one of the best teams in Europe.
Mm-hmm. And he's in an incredibly talented Brazil squad.
Yeah. I think he just has more experience, better understanding of the game, better understanding of what Mikel Arteta, for example, wants from a centre forward. I'm not saying that, like, Arteta can't sit down with Eddie and say, this is what I want you to do, this is how I want you to do it. And he's like, what? I don't mean that. I just think that the experience that he has at 25 years of age, with hundreds of first team appearances under his belt, gives him a better understanding and makes him a better footballer at this point in his career than Eddie is, you know? So I think the reaction to the Jesus injury, I don't think it's an overreaction. I think there's always been this slight undercurrent or this sense that, you know, we're a bit light at centre forward. Netherlands have won 3-1, final score there. Unlucky USA. I don't think it's an overreaction at all. I think people are right to be worried. When one of your best players gets an injury, it's a worry. And you hope that someone can step up, and I hope Eddie can step up, and fingers crossed he can do that. But, you know, I'm not going to lie and sit here on this podcast and say I'm not concerned about it, because that would be just nonsense.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
I've got one here.
Go on.
Let me just ask you this one. It comes from PJ, who's at Gunners Reek. And he said, I've been wanting to ask this since I became a fan. I've only been a fan for a year, but I've learned a lot about Arsenal's history. How important do you think it is to know the history of the club when you become a fan? Or does it only matter that you support the club now?
Wow, that's a really good question.
Mm.
Because I think history plays such a big role in determining the culture of the club,
yeah,
and the supporter culture. So I think in order to understand that supporter culture, you probably do need a certain awareness of, you know, the past. I think that must be part of the joy of coming to Arsenal late, or coming to Arsenal at any point in life, is that there's all that history to unpack and learn and discover. And we're blessed in that we've got very rich history. Is it important? I think I'm going to say it is important. I'm not saying that you have to have a Tim Stillman-esque recall of every Arsenal result since the 1930s by any means. I mean, I forget more than I remember, absolutely. But I do think some sort of contextual knowledge of how the club came to be the club it is today is valuable.
Mm.
Do you agree?
I do agree. I think it's sort of like discovering an author or a musician or something, and like they release an album that you maybe accidentally, or a book that you accidentally pick up and enjoy, and then you go, ooh, what else? What else have they got? And it's not quite the same, because football, you have to live in the moment, and football is about the next game, and we know that. But I think to sort of round out your understanding of the football club that you support, to get to, like, not necessarily relive, but to sort of experience in a different way the successes and the failures, you know, they won't mean as much, I don't think. Like, you can't look back and say, oh, Arsenal won the league in 98. That was great. They did really well there. The thing about football is you have to, that being in the moment is a big part of what makes it as important as it is to all of us, because you sort of had the highs and the lows. You've got that jeopardy that's involved in a big win or a big defeat, you know?
Yeah, if you've lived it, it means more.
But I do think it's, I'm not saying it's necessary. You don't have to, but, you know, there is a lot there to read, to listen to, and all those kinds of things. I think it is, I just don't understand why you wouldn't be interested in that if you became a supporter of a club, you know. Why wouldn't you want to go back and find out who were the best players? What were the big results? What were the big achievements? What were the big successes? You know, why is the club shirt red and white? Why, you know, all those kinds of things. I think they're just important. I think there's a treasure trove of history there for new Arsenal fans to enjoy. So, yeah, each their own. But I do think it is important, you know, to try and connect with the club on as many levels as you can. And that's certainly one of them.
Definitely. I think it really augments the experience. And I just think as well, like, it provides perspective. That's one of the most valuable things about it, actually, is that when you look at the broader history of the club, rather than just sort of the game by game, the day to day, which is very tempting to at times, you gain a sense of perspective of, well, clubs go through good times and bad times and peaks and troughs. And we only really talk about the good times predominantly. But, you know, this is a football club that's been around a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there have been stretches of success, and there have been other times too. I think it's a joy to unpack it all. So I don't know if I would ever tell someone it's necessary. I don't know if I would ever say you can't be a fan if you're not engaged with that aspect. But I would say I think it can only add to your it can only enrich your journey as well.
I'm just watching some pictures here of the Netherlands team celebrating at the end of the game, and thoughts and prayers today are with Richard Keys, who obviously shocking images that he is going to find very, very, very difficult to cope with.
Triggering, very triggering for him.
Indeed. Let's finish on this one. BJ Rogerson.
Yes.
He says, have you ever grabbed your balls and taunted an opponent, either in life or on the sports field?
I don't think I'm a very ball-grabby kind of guy.
Right.
I can't imagine a scenario where that I would deem that the appropriate gesture.
I do it all the time.
Do you?
Yeah, all the time. Like, I go to a restaurant, and if the food isn't up to scratch, I'll just sort of go to the kitchen, grab my balls, and say, chef, that's bullshit.
See, I'm the opposite. I, if anything, I don't want to draw attention to my balls. I'm walking around with them tucked firmly between my legs, trying to avoid that exact situation.
No, I would never do that off the pitch. But, you know, I can't say 100% that I haven't done something similar on the pitch.
Right.
Like, if you're playing, like, I'm not including, like, five-a-side, right? You know, five-a-side, the kind of five-a-side I think we play is sort of generally the same group of guys and the teams get mixed up week by week. Is that kind of how you play?
Yeah, that's how I would play,
That's how we play. So it's usually competitive but pretty friendly. Like, you're not going to smash your mate who you're going to play with next week into the side of the cage or anything like that. But when you were playing, let's say, 11-a-side football, competitive football, did you like to get involved in that kind of stuff at all?
Oh, yeah. In seriousness, I loved that, yeah.
Yeah.
I was probably quite a...
gobby prick?
Yeah. Well, more physical, I think.
All right, okay. Well, yeah, because, you're a big guy.
And I'm not quick or good, so... You know, I've got to use what I can.
Well, I certainly wasn't quick either. I'm not going to say I wasn't good, but, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to downplay that in my own mind. If I say it out loud, maybe it's true. So I don't want to ruin my memories of my own football career. But, yeah, I always loved a bit of that as well. Loved it when there was like a little center forward or a little fast guy up front who – I told you this story before. But when we were playing in Spain, when I lived in Spain and we were playing in Spain, there was three of us at the back, a back three. Me, there was a Spanish guy one side of me and an English guy. And there was a guy on the other team who, I don't know what happened to him that day, but he lost his reason. And it was a bit competitive and there was a bit of sort of argy-bargy and pushing and shoving and, you know, the usual sort of mouthiness and what have you going in the game. But this guy lost his mind. And we were laughing at him because he was going so crazy, you know? And laughing at him made him even more angry.
Right.
And he stood there and he pointed at us and he went, "Father Mucker! Father Mucker!" Which made us laugh even more.
Of course.
Because being called a Father Mucker was really, really very, very funny.
Did he say it by mistake?
No, he was a Spanish guy, and I think he just mispronounced it. You know, he wanted to call us motherfuckers, and he just mispronounced it as fothermuckers. But that, I can't explain to you just how funny that was, and that made us laugh even more.
Especially saying it with absolute seriousness and conviction.
Yeah. Oh, he was really good. He was really fucking giving it loads on the old fothermucker. And they had a corner about 2 minutes later. And as the ball came in, I ended up on my back in the penalty area because he fucking swung and hit me in the side of the head, swung a punch and hit me in the side of the head. So I'm
and
like,
guys, this is pre-VAR.
Yeah, no VAR at all. I'm lying on the ground going, what the fuck has happened here? I sort of get to my feet and our goalkeeper that day was a one of the lads, he used to play in midfield. We didn't have a goalkeeper that day, so he went in goal. But he was the kind of guy who would slide tackle on these hard clay pitches that they have in Spain. So he's basically jumped on the back of this guy and is trying to like punch the head off him. And fun times. I miss playing football.
Did he get caught for the swung elbow?
I think he got booked, maybe, but I'm not sure. But there was a big investigation afterwards because he then, I think he attacked somebody else in the changing rooms afterwards. I can't remember, but I remember there being a big investigation and I had to sort of provide email evidence to the league and everything else.
Whatever happened to that guy?
I don't know.
His name was Luis Suarez.
Oh, man. I really miss playing 11-a-side football.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
The fun we had.
I miss it too, even though, yes.
Don't get me wrong. I don't like being punched in the head. Like, I've gone through my entire life avoiding scenarios where people punch me in the head. I think that's a good way to go through your life, right? Boxers, a bit of an exception. MMA, bit of an exception, because they choose to be punched in the head. But for the most part, I prefer not to be punched in the head.
Okay.
I know it's crazy.
Guys, get in touch. Do you like being punched in the head? Let us know.
All right, look, let's go and do this, because there's another game tonight. We've got to watch the completely jinxed Argentinians take on Australia.
Sorry, Lionel.
Wait till he finds out it was you.
I know. He's going to be so pissed off.
He's going to be so pissed off. You won't be getting that interview for The Athletic, I don't think.
It's revenge for all those Barcelona games back in the Champions League days.
Well, that's fair enough. I think that's fair. If you frame it in that context, then I don't think anyone can blame you. All right. Well, look, it's early. Hope you enjoyed the show. We will, of course, have bits and pieces for you midweek, of course, on Patreon. If you haven't already listened, by the way, the Arsecast on Friday, far be it for me to sort of recommend something I've done myself, but I think the interview with Miles Coleman, who's the writer and producer of FIFA Uncovered, the documentary, is well worth a listen if you haven't had a chance. You don't need to have watched the documentary to listen to the podcast. There's no real spoilers in it, so do check that out.
I've heard it's very good, actually. I'm looking forward to that.
It is. Miles is really excellent, and you know, he expands on quite a few of the bits and pieces that are in the documentary. Well worth checking out.
Is it going to make me feel better about the World Cup? Or should I wait till after the World Cup to watch it?
I don't think it'll change your opinion on the World Cup itself.
No.
Because, I mean, there's a bit about Qatar, but it's not really about...
About FIFA.
It's more about the sort of the overarching FIFA-ness of FIFA than
the bureaucracy.
Rather than the sort of the individual decisions. There's some talk of a few of them, but it's not really going to change how you feel about this World Cup, I don't think. So, yeah, give it a bash.
All right. Nice.
All right, you guys, have a great weekend. Thank you for being here. I'm going to go get a beer, given it's Saturday evening. So, for now, take it easy, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.